Blog Talk Radio.
It's a week to take a deep breath and exhale. Miami Hurricanes have played a third of their season and are 4-0 as they enjoy a week off to work on simply getting better and hopefully also catching up on some schoolwork along the way. So what does everybody out there think about their team to this point in the season? Are you happy with an offense that's racking up yards and points while using four different running backs and a threesome of receivers who are markedly better than they were a year ago? Let's also not forget about a retooled offensive line that is probably the foundation for everything else. And what about the defense, which has surrendered a lot of yards on a few occasions, but really isn't giving up a ton of points? It's the pass defense that has struggled the most at times. Opponents are completing 57.4% of their passes for 225 yards per game through the first four contests. And three of the teams that Miami has faced this year were not exactly fielding dynamic passing attacks. Bethune-Cookman is number 96 in the nation in passing yards. Miami of Ohio is 90th in the nation in passing yards, and Temple is 49th. The fourth opponent, Texas A&M, had 336 passing yards against the Canes and is averaging only 301 on the season. So let's be real, pass defense has to get better. But on the flip side, Miami is only allowing 48 yards per game given up on the ground. That ranks number two in the nation and just 2 yards short of the number one spot in all of college football. And let's remember that that accomplishment is despite a challenged linebacker corps that was acknowledged as a weakness before the start of the season. Several tough hurdles lie ahead when you consider Georgia Tech is playing quality football and is on track to be a bowl team, that North Carolina is undefeated, that Clemson obviously is better than it has shown early this season in losing twice, and FSU and Louisville are also undefeated. So yes, this open week is about finding ways to improve for Mario Cristobal, his staff, and his players. How can the Canes get better? That is the theme of the conversation tonight as we begin a new edition of Canes Sport Live. Hello again, everybody. I'm Gary Furman, the publisher of canesport.com. We welcome you once again to Canes Sport Live. As always, this is your show, and it's driven by your participation. The call-in number is 563-999-3550. That's 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. That puts you in the queue, and then we bring you on the show in the order that you land in the queue. We have more than 100 open phone lines, plenty of room for everybody to call in and participate that would like to. Or if you're just riding around and you want to call in and listen, you can. But we would love to have you on the phone. We want first-time callers. We want to hear more voices. We want you participating in this show. This year, I'll once again be joined by Azubi Charles as we take your calls and discuss the various issues surrounding the Miami Hurricanes and recruiting. So one more time, the number, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550, and you hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Azubi, I'm going to start with you tonight because everybody wants to hear from you, for starters. And I'm going to ask you that same simple question. How can the Miami Hurricanes get better?
Yeah, well, Gary, I think it's pretty obvious, you know, when you look at the Hurricanes in every, you know, major statistic, whether it be offense or defense, you know, the Canes are either top 25, top 30, top 40 in, you know, pretty much amongst the best in the country. Like you mentioned, rushing defense is number two in the country. Offense-wise, I think we're top 25 in almost every country. And then you just see that one kind of glaring, you know, anomaly or difference is this pass defense. You know, you look at Miami's pass defense, I believe they're allowing around 250 yards per game, 66 in the country. And I feel like that's kind of the only thing you can be worrisome about or can be, you know, want to say you want to see it improve. And, you know, obviously, like you mentioned, Miami hasn't gone against a dynamic air attacker, a team that's going to air it out with, you know, amazing quarterbackers. You know, obviously, Texas A&M have those two really good receivers, but we haven't seen a true air attack that, you know, ranks amongst the best in the country, and Miami's still allowing, you know, these kind of numbers. So I feel like the passing game is the biggest and kind of only really concern I have, and we'll want to see Miami improve, you know, kind of moving forward with ACC played, you know, a week away or 2 weeks away.
Well, I mean, some of these passing games that are coming up are going to be better, you know. I mean, you know, North Carolina could certainly sling the ball around. Florida State, if you give Travis the protection and he's not harassed, he could be a pretty accurate thrower. Have not really had a chance to watch a ton of Jeff Brohm's offense at Louisville to really give a great opinion on how great their passing attack is. But Jeff Brohm's a passing game coach. He's a former quarterback. He's all about the passing game. So I'm assuming that when I do watch Louisville, that they will have a representative passing game. So, you know, you put it all together with all these teams that Miami is going to have to face down the road, and I'm certainly not dismissing Clemson at all just because they've lost a couple games. I mean, that team has a ton of talent, and they just haven't put it all together yet. So you got some tough outs here coming up. In the second and in the two-thirds of the season that's remaining. And that's why the theme right now is get better and find ways to get better. And, I, you know, all you guys that call in tonight, I'm hoping that you have some great opinions on this subject because it's very pertinent and very, very, very significant as the Canes move forward here in the season. So 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. And let's start out tonight in the 646, where you're live on Cane Sport Live.
Hey, what's up, Gary? BK Hurricane.
Hey, what's up, BK? How you doing this week?
I'm doing all right. Pretty sound performance on Saturday. Nothing too surprising there. But do you feel that Georgia Tech might be a better opponent than Temple, and we might be able to see a little bit more, or are we just going to have to wait to North Carolina to see what this team really looks like? They've just been pretty much breezing past people.
No, I think Georgia Tech is a legitimate opponent and a legitimate team. And I think people are going to overlook them, but they have been playing some reasonably decent football so far this season. And everybody I talk to tells me that Georgia Tech is going to be a bowl team when all is said and done at the end of the year. And I'm going to pull up their results here real quick if I can. I'm trying to get on the right place for that, but you know, they are a sneaky team. They've got the transfer quarterback from Texas A&M. Who is a decent player. Certainly cannot be overlooked. You know, the Atlanta area always produces very, very good athletes. And, you know, that's why when Georgia Tech has had quality coaching in place, they've always been a competitive team. And you remember all those years under Paul Johnson. That they were a difficult challenge for everybody, including Miami. So I think that they will come down here, obviously very motivated and very, you know, and very representative of themselves, and I think Miami's going to have to play a good football game.
I think so, too, to a degree, because I haven't really taken a good look at Georgia Tech. I don't know what their receivers look like. But even though we're winning these games, I'm not that thrilled about the performance of our cornerbacks in particular. You know, the cornerbacks that are starting now, I don't think anyone predicted during the summer and fall camp that these two guys would be, you know, the starters. At least one of the Brown brothers in there starting. But I think the other one is who? Is Jaden Harris and Porter, right, if I'm correct?
Porter.
Jaden Davis.
Yeah, Jaden Davis.
I'm sorry.
And Porter, correct, are both the two starters right now. And, you know, you got to assume the coaches know what they're doing there. And I'm kind of surprised that Devontae Brown has not started. I thought he would be a starter coming in here. But
I'm very surprised.
Yeah, but I'm also surprised that Jaden Richards is making hardly any contribution at all. You know, these are guys that came in by way of the transfer portal who have played college football.
All right, and Couch playing the nickel. He's kind of, you know, a hit or miss.
I totally agree. Like, you know,
sometimes he gets burnt.
Yeah. So there's not a lot of depth. We're surprised that the transfers that came in this year have not been making a bigger impact like we would have thought they would. Nobody's coming out of nowhere, really. And the drop-off, when you get to, like, the fourth quarter of these games where second-teamers in the game, BK, I don't know if you've noticed this, the drop-off is pretty significant.
It's bad.
So I think this whole pass defense thing is a legitimate concern. I really do.
Would you think we'll see Cam Kitchens this week, or they'll hold him to?
I have to believe you will see Cam Kitchens in the Georgia Tech game. This is not an opponent that they are going to take lightly. You know, they lost to Louisville in their opener, 39-34. Okay, Louisville's undefeated right now. Okay, it was a 39-34 game. Their quarterback, King, threw for 313 yards in that game. Okay, Miami's weakness has been pass defense. Then they beat South Carolina State, okay, whatever, 48-13. And they lost to Ole Miss, 48-23. But even in that game against Ole Miss, King threw for 307 yards. Okay, they beat Wake Forest at Wake Forest. Their game against Ole Miss, by the way, was at Ole Miss, so not a surprise that they lost. And their game against Louisville was at home, and they almost upset Louisville. Their game against Wake Forest was at Wake Forest. They beat them 30-16 on the road. That was a better win than people think. You know, Wake Forest has been a very competitive football team over the last several years. So King only had 222 yards in that one. But you've got a quarterback that's thrown for 300, basically, in three of the first four games, matching up against your weakness on defense, which is pass defense. There's no chance Lance Guidry is taking this game for granted. There's no chance Mario Cristobal is taking this game for granted. I think you're going to see everybody that can be back for Georgia Tech. They are not going to be looking to mess around with that ball game.
I hope so, because ever since Cam went out, James Williams looked like a totally different player. He's totally different. When Cam was back there with him, I think he took Cam as more of a security blanket, so he was able to go out there and do, you know, those big hits like he liked to do. Ever since Cam went out, he looks different. You can't even spot him on the field.
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think that's fair.
Well, he's not standing out, Gary.
You can spot him on the field. If you want to make the argument that James
Williams... He's not standing out.
Well... Yeah, I mean, if you want to make an argument that James Williams is a better football player with Cam Kitchens on the field, I would totally agree with you on that. But I think you're overreaching a little bit to suggest he's been playing poorly. Azubi, what are your thoughts on that?
I kind of want to reverse it a little bit. I'll get to the James one later. But with the Georgia Tech, I do want to say, obviously, Haynes King is a great quarterback. But if you kind of flip it to the other side of the ball, you know, if we look at Miami's first four games, what has kind of been the, you know, most dominant thing they've done is run the ball. And if you look at Georgia Tech's defense, out of 120-something FBS teams, they have, the third worst rushing defense in the country. So I feel like that's something that, you know, Miami can exploit. But obviously, Hank King is still good at, you know, poison threats, and he's a dual threat guy. You know, good four-star coming out of high school. But that's something I just want to bring up with Georgia Tech real quick that, I thought was very interesting, how atrocious their run defense is. But with the James situation, I wouldn't say he has completely gone missing, but I can say agree with when him and Cam are back there, you know, that duo they have, that, you know, connection and dynamic they have is, you know, there. Obviously, he's been playing with Cam for 3 straight years, so obviously that pair, they know each other, you know, like the inside of their hands. And when you bring another safety, and obviously I feel like that communication level isn't going to be as tight or as, you know, consistent as Cam. But I wouldn't go as far as saying he's kind of went, you know, MIA. Obviously, he has played better with Cam on the field. But, you know, I feel like that drop-off is kind of, you know, that's going to be there when you bring in a new person. Obviously, they don't have the same connection. I believe Jaden Harrison's been back there. He doesn't have the same connection with Cam. But, you know, I've liked what I've seen from James so far this season. He's been more consistent all around. And I feel like, you know, under Lance Guidry, he's using him and possible kind of getting the best out of him as well.
Okay. I mean, that's fair enough. What happened to Brian Bailum? Is he still on the team? Or I remember he tried to hit the portal. They convinced him to stay. Did he ever stay or did he leave?
No, he's there.
He had a problem. He looked kind of promising. I don't know what happened.
I mean, he's
yeah,
already,
that was a very interesting situation. With him kind of going in the portal and then coming back. And then that's very – yeah. Sorry to cut you off, Gary. Go ahead.
No, I mean, he is what he is. I mean, he's a backup safety. I believe he's been playing on special teams.
Is he a backup safety or a backup to the backup?
I mean, it's all semantics.
I'm thinking he's the backup to the backup at this point. You know? But listen, guys, thanks for having me. So just keep me on hold, Gary.
All right, BK, thank you as always for being part of the show. Good hearing from you. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. You know, the one thing that stands out to me when I look at Georgia Tech's season so far is the teams like Louisville and Ole Miss, which probably have comparable type offensive styles to Miami. You know, both teams like to throw the ball fairly wide open, that kind of thing. Louisville scored 39, Ole Miss scored 48. So I think you can walk into that game assuming that Miami's going to be in the 40s if they continue playing offense the way they have. And that's going to be a tall order for Georgia Tech to score that many points. But certainly not a team to take for granted because they are able to move the ball fairly well themselves. And they've got a running back named Haynes that has put up some pretty good numbers this year in addition to the passing yards that King has put up. All right, let's go out to the 757. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Well, first of all, yeah, we need to work on that. But let me ask, Gary, were you at the Temple game?
I was there. Where were you?
So you was at the Temple game, huh?
I was there,
and I heard that little smart mouth you had last week talking about when I hung up. Don't you play me like that, bro. I was at the greatest game on the earth Sunday. You know what that game was, right? In Hard Rock. Yeah, I was there with the 70 points. I didn't go to the Temple game. I'm going to be down there at Georgia Tech game. Azubi put you in your place, but I'm going to help you. I'm going to put you in your place. And you're going to
play
your
place. I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, what are you talking about?
Oh, you know what I'm talking about. Don't act that. See, that's that bullshit. Azubi, this is what Gary do. He act like he forget. Oh, it's
King. I totally forget.
Wait a minute.
No.
You made it seem like if he that loyal, he should find a way to get off work. A couple other callers called
no,
you and said, hey,
yeah.
Man, we got to work. Bro,
yeah,
you can't do this to me.
Yeah, I can see
me.
That.
You're not going to talk to me, bro. I ain't going to let you do some of them
things. I said I wanted to see you at the game.
My loyalty is to the Canes and the Dolphins. You're messing with the wrong one, bro. You don't doubt me. You
it
can't
was
doubt me.
Canes. It was next to
you.
Did
he not doubt me, man? Because you had to clear it up. Man, the man got season tickets, and he fly from Virginia, and he got season tickets with the Dolphins and the King. That's enough loyalty. Don't you ever play me like that again. If you play me like that, I'm going to play you. That's for real.
You totally, misunderstood.
Yeah, you do this shit all the time, bro. You
Chain
gotta
Chain.
Stop with your madness. I'm gonna get off this phone. I ain't want no hell no. I ain't
wearing
my business.
I wanted to see you in Philadelphia.
No, you didn't want
to
see me.
I wanted to take you for a cheesesteak.
I'm going to find your monkey ass in Georgia Tech because I'm tired of you. You met me before, but that was at the beginning. You're going to really meet me now. I'm going to make my way to find you. Georgia Tech, Clemson, whatever game I'm coming to, the damn Louisville game, I'm naming these games I'm coming to. And I got to get on a plane just like you got to get on a plane. So if I don't make Carolina game, don't worry about it. But once
right,
again, yeah, fast defense
move
gotta
on,
get better.
Misunderstood. Move on.
Fast defense gotta get better. Point blank, kid. I'm out of here. Hey, Azubi, watch who you hang with, because Gary be wishing watching like a mom. Peace out. And everybody on this damn site know I'm telling the truth. I'm out. Gone.
Oh, my God. Azubi, did I say anything offensive about Kane Kane? I love Kane Kane.
No, I just think he, when you said he has to come to the game, I kind of said I give him a break from missing a couple games because he goes everywhere else. But and was he energetic tonight? That's funny. Always a good time when Ken Kane's on the phone.
Ken Kane, I hope you're still listening. I'm sorry if you took that personally. I just wanted to see you in Philly. I want to meet you. That's all. You live in Virginia, which is not that far from Philly. So I made the comment. Man, we got to get him to drive from Virginia to Philly. That was it. It was nothing. Certainly nothing malicious intended by any of that. Wow. All right, let's get back to business here. 563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. Let's go out to the 786. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, good evening, gentlemen. How are we doing?
Hey, doing great. Who's this?
Everything.
Oh, hey, Everything. How are you, man? I didn't recognize your voice tonight.
Man,
you're giving us the bass, a little bit more bass than you usually do.
Yeah, just fight a little cold, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Gary, I can't believe we're messing with KK like that.
Oh, my God, that was crazy. Why would I ever insult anybody, much less Kane Kane? I mean, oh, my God.
But I love his energy. Love his energy. you know, Gary, you guys have mentioned a few times on the morning show, men in particular, and I think Azubi talked about it last week, with our defense having these great numbers, but knowing what we really have, you know, you're going to face a quality offense here on Saturday of next week. That's not a bad offense. Guy's an offensive mind. He's got a good quarterback. And I think he's also got a bit of a reshuffled line with 3 transfer portal kids in there as well. I think only 2 are starting right now, but the other one's in the rotation. But my point is that we can't look past the teams that down the road. You can't look past the team you're going to play first before you look at all those big names that are going to be there in October. They're going to be there, but you got to focus on things that we're at right now. We've got to get a lot better on defense. I know Cam will be being there. We'll definitely help things out. And hopefully, you know, we've got some more guys on defense coming back in the defensive line. But, you know, we're a long ways away from, you know, putting our chest out there and proclaiming we're back and all those other things. We're not even close to being where we need to be right now. We're better. And I think we got to, you know, take that with a grain of salt. Yeah, we are better, but we still have major holes. And I think every Kane fan, whether you were at the game last Saturday up there in Philly, you were watching on TV like I was, when I saw Matt Lee go down, it was like taking the air out of the room. I mean, we were all quiet for a while. And that's how close we are to having everything impacted. It's just one major injury and on either the offense or defense side of the ball. Cam got hurt, same thing. We're not deep. We're not deep yet. We got a lot of inexperienced guys. We got a lot of talent. We got a lot of guys that aren't ready to go yet. It's just a matter of time before they're ready to play and contribute, you know, on the field. But I think we got to look at things a little bit different. Let's just take it week by week.
You know, I hear what you're saying, but do you think that that's the public perception of the Canes fan? I don't.
Beating Temple.
Well, let me give you an example. I'll give you an example of everything. So I brought up after the game the other day, I brought up the fact that I really didn't like the interception and penalty in the second half when it was fourth down from the Temple 25. Temple was going for it, and they try to pass about 20 yards downfield. And the smart football play at that point is to bat it down. You bat it down, and you give your offense the ball at the 25-yard line. And, you know, that's not what happened. The ball was intercepted 20 yards up the field, and then Keontra Smith makes it worse and comes off the bench, which obviously you're not allowed to do. He comes off the bench and draws an extra 15-yard penalty. So they lost 35 yards on that play. And, like, to me, that trumped almost everything else I saw out there, because to me, that is the kind of play that can cost you one of these games down the road. And there's going to be four or five, at least, of them that are going to probably be close, tight games in the fourth quarter. If anybody thinks that the Canes are going to keep walking over every opponent, I think they're dreaming a little bit. And, you know, these games are probably going to be close going into the fourth quarter, and where one play can tilt the balance of the game. And you have to be disciplined. You got to have situational awareness. And so I brought this up, and I was amazed, and I brought it up on our morning show, and I was amazed at the wide range of responses and reactions to that. And I would say the majority of the Canes fans that commented on what I said came on the side of, no, that play was perfectly okay, man. You got to pad your stats. You got to, you know, you may, if you're a DB, you make an interception when you can make an interception. Nobody was bothered by giving up 35 yards of field position. And I'm thinking to myself, am I crazy? But, like, to me, that is a sign of the complacency of winning these first four games by easy fashion has created. And that's what cannot seep into the football team, the program, the coaches, anybody. Nobody can afford to be complacent right now. They got to keep their pedal to the metal.
Gary, I think you're still ways away from getting great chemistry top to bottom on that defensive side of the ball. There's still a long way to go. Guys are not even close to be, you know, understanding what one is doing and what the other's assignments are. They still don't see it all together yet. They're getting better at it because it's not an easy defense. I mean, yeah, it's easy to go ahead and just think you're going to be a dog chasing a car across the board, but that's not what this scheme is. You got a lot of defensive ends that are going to line up on a running back or a tight end, or have to defend even a wide receiver at times in this scheme. There's so much to this thing that it's just the guys aren't totally comfortable with it yet. I think they've transitioned well into it, but there's a long way to go. And I think situational awareness is one thing, but you also have to look at just the ability to have fun. These kids didn't have fun last year. So there's an avenue there that they, especially older guys like Keontra, that this is probably it for a couple of guys like him. This is their year. So I know it's a bad penalty, but I kind of understand it because I don't think as a whole those kids had fun last year. I think it was
they definitely did not. I'll tell you right now.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Keontra makes moves like that. You're not going to see him on the field very much. I assure you that did not go over very well.
No, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And
running
off
the sideline onto the field and getting a 15-yard penalty, you can't do that.
No, that's smart at all. I'll tell you this much. I've watched that kid a lot. There's a couple of older guys that aren't playing as much as they have the past 2 years. That guy on the sideline, I like his energy. I like his enthusiasm. He gets special team reps. He gets quite a few. I think he's a starter on defending or kickoff return. I know he's on two specials. I always see four out there. But I just think that this is more of a team that we've had here the last two, possibly 3 years. So it's coming together, but we still have a long ways to go. And Georgia Tech's going to present some good battles for us. But I'm really just hoping that we can stay healthy, get our guys back that are nicked up. And Gary, one thing, I know he doesn't share any information with regards to injuries. But, you know, we always get, you know, information from one source or another, you know. How bad is Messidor's situation?
I mean, I look at him, he's walking around fine. I mean, you know, I think he's got a little bit of a foot problem. You know, I think they're resting him as long as they can. I would be shocked if we didn't see him in these next few games. I mean, but we do not know for sure. Pardon the pun.
Yeah,
pardon for sure there, but we don't know what the pin it is. Huh?
Didn't he miss like the last 3 weeks of camp?
He's always had this. He's had this problem going back to last year. Yeah, I mean, that's his one problem is he's hurt all the time. But it doesn't look serious to me because, like, there's no limb. I don't see a limp. I don't see a boot. You know, I just see him walking around. I think they want to make sure that he's there for these conference games if they can. And that's why they were resting him these last few weeks.
Well, I mean, he had to leave the A&M game, but previous to him leaving the game with that, with aggravating that injury, it was very effective. I mean, he was occupying two guys a heck of a lot.
Oh, he's
that,
a hell
his
of
impact
a football
was
player.
Great that day.
They need him out there. Like, you know, if he's not out there for these key games later in the season, that significantly compromises their chances to win. I mean, they have no pass rush right now. Everything with a 4-man rush. They have to bring exotic blitzes to get pressure on the quarterback the way they did in the first half against Texas A&M.
I saw a comparison between Hurricane Bane and the kid from Florida State, and I think Ruben has one more sack, but Verse has like six more pressures. And given the amount of reps that he's had,
well,
compared
Ruben
to Verse,
he's not at that level yet. He's a true freshman. He's learning.
He's a true freshman, but I got to tell you, Gary, he's always pressured. He's always coming in on the.
I agree. He's very strong. He's very strong. You could see how strong he is, particularly when you're playing teams like Temple that aren't that big. I mean, he was muscling those guys pretty good. Now, you know, some of the teams they're going to play down the road are going to have bigger and stronger offensive linemen. I mean, let's be honest, but
no doubt about it.
Ruben Bain's a very good player. The fact that he's even out there at the beginning of his freshman year starting like he did is like totally ridiculous. Like, and you're not going to see the best of him, obviously, in his first year. He's going to keep getting better and better.
And then on the recruiting front, I was wondering if Azubi could bring us up to speed. Hearing a lot of different things with JoJo's teammate and someone that we've been after for a long time here since ninth grade, I think we've been on him. What's the reality here that we have with Jeremiah? I mean, is he truly looking at Florida based on the incoming quarterback, the kid's all senior this year out of Texas? I mean, how strong is that bond? I mean, how strong is that? If he is going to flip, he's going to flip there. Where would you put things at right now with him?
So with him, obviously I can't speak, you know, too much on the Florida and the Florida recruits because I'm not, you know, involved with them and talking to those guys. But I honestly do not think that connection with, you know, quarterback in Texas that he doesn't really know. Obviously met him a few times during recruiting trips and, you know, tweet at him, hey, come to Florida, has that big of an effect as people think. Obviously, now with JoJo Trader and Zaquan Patterson, his best friend since they were kids, his high school teammates tell him that from the hometown, I feel like that has a lot more kind of weight, and I would put a lot more weight behind that than a kid in Texas that obviously he doesn't have a legit bond with or a serious bond that I know of or have ever heard of besides, you know, Twitter engagements and, you know, talking at a game. But Miami-wise, I think Miami's kind of, you know, like I said a few weeks ago, they're kind of just loading up that ammunition and just keep making rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds. With Jeremiah, obviously, you know, they're doing all that they told them they were going to do. They're producing on the field. Colby Young looks amazing. You know, Jacoby George looks amazing. Xavier Restrepo looks amazing. And this passing game looks completely different. But you look at, you know, the players that are doing this, the same exact players that were here last year, DVD and those three wide receivers. There's no big transfer that came in. There's no five-star recruit that came in. It's the same guys. And you actually see coaching can make a difference. And these guys look, you know, 1,000% better than they did last year. And Coach KB, he's a very good recruiter. He's doing his job. He's making these kids feel like, hey, I don't have to go to Ohio State to be, you know, a first-round draft pick or do all this. Hey, why would I have to leave, you know, my backyard when I've been doing this in Miami my whole entire life to go somewhere else and kind of, you know, the kids love to say, why would I leave to go put on for a different city when I can put on for my own city? So I feel like the more Miami continues to do what they're doing, which is show the progression, you know, we can check that off the list. The receivers are putting up numbers, we can check that off the list. And Coach Beard is keeping his word and is doing a great job of just trying to convince these kids, hey, stay home and be great in your hometown rather than go somewhere. So I'm not too sure about the Florida smoke. I mean, I think they kicked 5 field goals against Charlotte or whoever they played, a not very good team in front of him. I don't see, as a recruit, that's something you want to, you know, go play that type of offense. And then you look at Miami every week, you know, different wide receivers doing something good, doing something great. Offense looks great. And he's also going to be at the Georgia Tech game, too, with another big wide receiver target, Nye Carr, that they're bringing in. So they have another great showing against Georgia Tech, which I believe they will do. I feel like it's just going to, you know, keep getting better for Miami. I'm not saying this is, you know, I think Jeremiah's going to flip. I really, really do. But I think Miami's kind of chipping away bit by bit by bit. And we talked about this again a few weeks ago. Ohio State's offense, or, you know, under Brian Hartline, isn't looking as amazing as it has in the past. You know, you see him and Ryan Day kind of butting heads on the sidelines, Ryan Day calling calls, and, you know, Hartline on the outside of the huddle looking in. So you're looking, you know, not how it used to look up in Ohio State and looking a lot better in Miami. So, and like I said, I think Miami's chipping away and doing all the right things right now to keep their name in that race.
Who's the next kid that you think right now? I mean, we've heard a lot of noise the last 48 hours. You know, Pop's put a good tweet out there, hearing a lot of stuff. Smith always putting stuff out there. If someone is going to be committing here in the next couple of days, who do you see that potentially being?
Well, obviously, we had the safety out of Mainland. Zay Mincy, he apparently did a silent commitment, but that's like, we won't know that till, you know, National Signing Day. But one guy that's been really, really hot as of late, the name that kind of popped up, you know, out of nowhere, was Nye Carr out of Georgia, the former Georgia commit. And Miami's kind of, you know, making that full court press on him. They sent Coach Cody Waddell up there. He's really liking Miami. I wouldn't say in the next few days, but that would definitely be one to monitor the next few weeks. You know, he's going to the Georgia Tech game as well that I just said. So he's going to be another guy that, you know, we're going to be keeping a real close eye on to see how that goes, to see what, you know, his coaches are saying, to see what he's saying and things like that. But right now I feel like it's kind of, you know, not quiet, but, you know, I don't see or I haven't heard of a name that could, you know, pop and make that decision. Obviously, you never know with you know, recruits these days and how recruiting works that, you know, someone might, you know, hey, I want a commitment, I let's do it. But as of right now, I don't really, you know, have a name or know of a guy that's ready to pull the trigger right now at this moment.
I wouldn't sleep on L.J. McCray.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't sleep on L.J. McCray, Mincy's teammate.
Only reason I wouldn't name L.J. is because he still has that OV to FSU in October, which is kind of that lingering thing right now.
Yeah.
Well, what about the kid that I think he's technically the JUCO kid, but he's been in contact. I think he did an official visit this summer.
Sion Laule out of San Mateo.
Yeah, I mean we're the only East Coast school really that is top three. But how serious do you think that situation looks like at this stage?
I think it's very serious. You know, I spoke with him, I think a day or two after he got that offer from Miami in March. He said Alonzo Highsmith was one that offered him. And since the first time I've ever spoken to him, he's always been really, really interested in Miami. I believe in July when he took the official visit in June, and then in July he came for the barbecue. And back then, I think it was Penn State and Utah or BYU was another team that was kind of in the mix for him, and then he cut it down to three when I spoke with him a few days ago with Miami, USC, and Oregon. And obviously with Miami, you know, landing his teammate, his former teammate, his best friend, Dimitri Freeney, who played with him at San Mateo last year, he's recruiting him as well. Coach Cristobal is the one that's on top of him. Obviously, we know how good of a recruiter Coach Cristobal is and, you know, what he's done in the past and what he's doing now with Miami. So I feel like Miami, if there's one thing I can say, Miami has probably been the team that has been there with him the longest, has been pushing with him, you know, the hardest, for the most consistent, all that good stuff. And I really do think Miami has a great chance of landing him. He's got to commit the day after Miami's game against Georgia Tech on October 7th. And, you know, one interesting thing that he's always said is he's a JUCO kid, so he's leaving college with about 2 years left of eligibility. He wants to go to a program where he can play right away. And Coach Cristobal is telling him, hey, you come here. Obviously, you can't guarantee a starting spot, but he's saying, hey, you come here, you're going to play right away. We're going to give you one side of the field. You lock that side of the field, and that's going to be your spot. So I feel like that's something that obviously other schools can kind of say and offer. But if you're hearing that from the head man and that's been consistent with you, you really trust. I feel like that's really big on him. And another thing, too, is development. I talked to him about Coach Adai. We saw Coach Adai comes in last year. He gets Tyree Stevenson drafted in the second round. He gets DJ Ivy drafted in the seventh round. And two of his guys from Georgia the year before get drafted as well. So the development factor is there. The early playing time opportunity is there. His best friend currently plays at Miami. He's recruiting him as well. So I feel like it's kind of a perfect storm right now for Miami, not trying to be cliche, but I feel like Miami has a really good opportunity landing him.
Great stuff, man. Appreciate you. Guys, have a great rest of your week, and go Canes.
All right, everything. Thank you for being part of the show, man. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. That's your number. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. That will put you in the queue. We will bring you on the show in the order that you land in the queue. And now we are going to go down to the 305, where you're live on Canes Sport Live.
That me?
That's you? Who's this?
I don't think I pressed up. This is Jay.
What's up, Jay?
How are you?
Oh, honey. Sure.
All right. Now, Cormani McClain just came out. I responded to your post. It came out like 2 hours ago with what's going on over there. Question. If he wants to transfer here, he's homesick. Do we write that off? What's going on now? Is him just being homesick and we take a chance? Or we say no thank you?
Azubi, I think they would take. I think they would take a Cormani McClain transfer. What do you think?
I really don't know. After hearing what, you know, they're saying over there in Colorado about him, you know, not watching enough film, not showing up on time, the film sessions, not being kind of a full ball player shooting game. I feel like that's not the type of player Mario Cristobal wants in his program right now. We see how, you know, furious he is. All last year he talked about building his culture, bringing in the guys that fit the culture. And I feel like if you're hearing, you know, all this stuff about him at Colorado and then how that whole situation went down when they all showed up to his school, he didn't say anything to them, he just left and things like that. Obviously, he's a talented kid, but at some point you kind of have to put that, you know, his approach to the game and who he is kind of over that talent, because, you know, having that one bad apple can always, you know, mess up the whole batch. So if I'm Mario Cristobal and those guys personally, I don't think, you know, I take somebody like that that's kind of, you know, not checked in or not all in and bought in and system and things like that.
Well, I mean, they took two of them. Who had problems.
That is also true.
He had problems at Alabama that were probably way bigger than what Cormani McClain is having at Colorado. I would call Cormani McClain's troubles at Colorado immaturity, maybe being away from home for the first time. You know, being a knucklehead true freshman, you know, I don't know if it's an indictment on what he will be for his entire career. There would obviously have to be some conversations. But they're all in recruiting on Cormani, and that's for sure. They couldn't have been more all in than they were. So if he goes into the transfer portal, I think there would definitely at least at worst be some serious conversations.
Right. I mean, there are two stacks who recruited him, two staffs that evaluated him, including Mario, and I guess Alonzo. And I guess they might have saw what we're seeing now, but maybe the five star we got to keep after him. So I think that's what happened. My gut tells me no, but you know, if he sits out there in Arizona and they sign off on it, then my gut tells me no. I was just thinking ahead hypothetically.
Listen, I'm not going to make excuses for I won't make excuses for Cormani, yeah. But on face value, from pure observations of what I'm watching, like, that atmosphere in Colorado, you know, a kid can easily go astray in that type of atmosphere where everything is so showy and loose. And I don't know, man, like, this kid might need the structure of a program like Miami.
Right. Well, the other 84 kids didn't buy into that. Well, the players that were on the field versus TCU and Colorado State sure as hell didn't go.
Yeah, but you can't sit there and say that all the other 84 scholarship players are all doing the right thing, and Cormani McClain is the only kid on the Colorado roster not doing the right thing. Come on, man.
It sticks out like a sore thumb because he's a five-star.
Yeah, maybe, but
that's all I'm saying.
You can't make that level of judgment on a kid that's just been in college for a few months.
Right.
That is not exactly the most, what I would call the most structured environment I've ever seen. I mean, you got kids that go to Oregon. They're stomping all over the logos and like already. And I mean, they won a couple games. This is a team that was the absolute dog crap last year. That everybody got jettisoned. All these guys coming in the portal, and now they're going to one of the top programs in the country. And the best that they're doing is they're stomping all over their logo before the game. I mean, to me, that's not a structured program. That is not a program where an immature kid that clearly Cormani McClain might be will necessarily thrive.
Right, I can see that. If Deion took over the 2001 Hurricanes, that would be a different story. This is different. having said that, now, I'm sure as glad as hell that he had a falling out with FSU, because if he did not, that would be trouble. That would be a lot of trouble. So I don't have to worry about that.
What if Georgia Tech had given him the job? Yeah, that would have been trouble too. You know, Deion in Atlanta.
Yep. Or how about one of the Texas schools? Same thing.
Yeah, well, that's not
because he spent so much time with the Cowboys. Anyway, I got a theory, and I want you to just comment on it. It's no longer a four-year rebuild. I think people are starting to come to grips with that. They're kind of like in purgatory. They won't let go of it. But then the way the transfer portal is now, it's no longer a four-year rebuild. It's a two-year rebuild. And you get the right coach and the competitive NIL, it's a two-year FSU.
Well, we're kind of finding that out this year.
Second-year FSU, they're a contender. If we beat North Carolina and Clemson, we will be playing FSU to prove that it's a one-year turnaround, possibly. You see, and then look at the reverse. The two major programs that don't really participate in NIL, Clemson, Alabama. It's a two-year deal, all right. It's a two-year deal back to mediocrity. Look how far they've regressed in 2 years. Clemson and Alabama do not participate that much in the portal. And look what happened. So you could prove it either way, getting better or getting worse. You could prove that theory either way. What do you think?
Go ahead, Azubi.
Oh, can you say that again?
He's talking about you could proving that you could get this done in 1 to 2 years. It doesn't have to be a four-year rebuild anymore.
Oh, yeah, I do have to agree with that. Obviously, with the transport, how things work, but I feel like you can't live or sustain a program because I feel like high school recruiting does take time, and to build a sustainable program over the years, you're going to have guys that have been in your program from the freshman to junior, senior, and you know, have that consistent next guy up instead of plucking a guy from a program, say, hey, you're going to be our guy for this year. And I don't think that's going to
like be sustainable in the long run. Because if you look at the big programs that have been kind of the juggernauts of college football over the past 10, 15 years, the Alabamas, the Georgias as of late, they're not, you know, taking in 20 to 30 portal guys every year. I feel like that's a great way to kickstart your program and kind of get on the right track. But I feel like at the end of the day, that 1-2 rebuild isn't going to be a thing that you see for a very long time, or something that a program starts with a quick rebuild like that and then becomes, you know, a super powerhouse if they keep doing that year in and year out.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this team and I still see a lot of holes. I see a massive drop off when the subs go in the fourth quarter. I mean, I still see a lot of holes. There's not a lot of depth. You know, so far we've escaped, you know, the major injury. We've survived Mesidor getting hurt because of the schedule. I mean, you know, this thing's still held together by a very, very delicate string. And
I think there is one big hole, and it's depth. There's not holes. There's one big hole. It's overall depth.
Yeah.
That's what it is. And so far, got our fingers crossed, but, you know, watching the Temple game, every play, you're like, don't get hurt. Don't get, after the first quarter, don't get hurt. What's this guy still doing in there? You know, it gets on your nerves a little bit. Anyway, I'll be at Georgia Tech, and I'll bring a bodyguard for you because the team sounded really angry.
Hey, if Kane comes after me. I love Kane Kane. I don't know what got into him tonight. He's crazy.
We'll provide a bodyguard for you,
Steve. I would have loved to share a cheesesteak with Kane Kane. I would have loved to run the Rocky Steps with Kane Kane.
Right. I spoke to him on the phone. I think last year we exchanged numbers. He really is the same way in person, on the phone, on the show.
Cool.
So he's a fun guy to talk to. Anyway, that's all I got.
All right, man. Thank you for being part of the show.
All right.
563-999-3550. 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about a 1-year rebuild. I mean, right now the Canes are 4-0. It's a good start to this year. We will see what happens. If they're able to win 10 games this year, Azubi, I mean, what an accomplishment that would be. I don't know if that would be the completion of a rebuild, but a 10-win season this year would just be spectacular.
Yeah, no, that would be huge in my opinion. Obviously, coming off what we saw last year, you kind of, you know, gutted your staff, you gutted your team, you bring in a bunch of guys, and, you know, things are clicking, you know, right now. And I feel like 10 wins would be the perfect season for Miami, because the perfect season is obviously winning a national championship and all that, but the most ideal season for Miami coming off of what they had last year. And, you know, like we kind of just alluded to, that 1-year turnaround or that 1-year transformation, I don't think that's sustainable, because if you look at next year, you lose, you know, the not the heart and soul, but the driving power of your team in Tyler Van Dyke if he decides to go, and then you're kind of, you know, scrambling for a quarterback and things like that. But I do feel like, you know, if Miami gets to that 10-week mark this year, that'll be the ideal, you know, thing for recruiting, for momentum going into next year, and for a bunch of other things. But, you know, we've got a long, long way to go till that. So we'll see if things get to that point sometime this year.
All right, let's go out to the 609. You are live on Kane Sport Live. How you doing this evening?
Hey, Gary. How you doing? This is Lewis, first time caller.
Who's this?
Lewis.
Hey, Lewis. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thank you. I have a question in reference to the team, and I have a question for Zubi, but I'll get to the team first, Gary. And I definitely agree with you in a sense of where the cornerbacks is probably the weakest link, as we see right now. And I, honestly, if you look at the whole situation, I don't think it's going to change. You know, you're not going to get like a shutdown corner next 7 weeks and they just show up and all of a sudden. I think it's just, honestly, that's the hand we unfortunately have to play this year, even though we've started off, you know, great, and we can't, you know, not complain about that. But that's just something that we're going to just somehow, Mario's going to have to deal with, and Lance Guidry's going to have to somehow, you know, scheme it up or try to get through it, you know. So, and, you know, the best thing, you know, for a week second, or at least cornerback at least, would be have a really good pass rush. But, you know, I haven't still seen Nigel Leak step up this year. And, you know, like you mentioned, that's always, like, always hurt, seems like. So hopefully that could change. But I think the one thing that kind of gives me, even though I honestly see that's that glare on the team there, is this offensive line has really surprised me and even gotten to a point where I'm kind of even drinking a little bit of the Kool-Aid when it comes to this offensive line because, you know, not only with the starting five, but how the tight ends are blocking, you know, like McCormick and even the freshman the other day, he was blocking so good, Riley Williams, and just how they're making these holes. I think if a team that might definitely has deficiencies, and we all know that, you know, we're not these insane Kane fans that think that everything is great. If if Miami can really continue to take over team games with that offensive line, you can really take a take over a game, running the ball, hitting that pass. You know, you have a quarterback that can make all the throws and can be a top quarterback. But if that offensive line can continue to produce and just control the running game, I think that also takes plays from like a Drake May or these offenses that are going to come in the next several weeks that Miami's going to face and will limit, you know, those offensive possessions of these teams. Not saying that we're going to win them all, you know, stuff like that, of course. But I think if you could have a dominant, you know, offensive line that can take control, you know, I think that's something I think we will have to ride that part of the team because I think that's part of the foundation, as you mentioned, of this team this year. And then also they add a McCoy in there too. I mean, I love how they bring those big guys and just pound it and then just throw the rock. What do you think about that?
I mean, the thing I'll say is that they're certainly not going to get worse. I mean, this is their first time playing together. You got a few young guys there. Like that O line is only going to get progressively better week by week, I would think. They've been great so far. They're you couldn't be more happy with those guys.
Definitely. Now the next four games we have is Georgia Tech, UNC, Clemson, and Virginia. You know, if I had to ask you and Zuby, like just to throw it out, what would be the record next four? I kind of say. I'm not going to say 4-0 because I think that's kind of like – I mean, is it possible? Of course, anything's possible, but I think that's shooting really – you know, that's really too much there. But I think if anything
gotta
be 3-1 –
you got to be
3-1.
Right.
That's
two, okay?
Yeah.
Now, the other two, I personally feel like if they split those two, they're doing well.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I agree one game at a time. Go ahead, Zuby. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they come out of that 3-1. I think just I don't want to be a Debbie Downer and say, you know, Miami is going to lose the game, but I just think one of those games, either the UNC or Clemson one, might get away from Miami. I just have that feeling. Obviously, you know, beginning of the year when I, you know, initially predicted the schedule, I said 9-3, but the three losses being UNC, Clemson, and Florida State. And just after watching those teams play now, I do think Miami's going to come away with a win in one of those games, and I feel like one of those games are going to be a UNC or Clemson one. But obviously 4-0 is the ideal situation, but I just think that they're going to come out that four-game series 3-1, you know, headed into FSU.
Right. Yeah.
I think UNC matches up very well with their offense against Miami's defense when you look at the struggles rushing the passer, when you look at the struggles in the secondary. That's going to be a tough out on the road. It'll probably be a night game, I'm guessing, in Chapel Hill. I mean, that to me, that one is really going to be tough. And I still think Clemson is better than people think they are. They're just struggling a little bit to find themselves here early in the season. But they got plenty of good players on that team.
Yeah, right, I agree. I mean, I agree. This program, we can't even look past anybody. It's one week at a time. So I definitely not looking past nobody or whatever and thinking because, you know, with our history in the past, you know, years already, we can't be looking at past nobody. 3-1, I kind of agree. 2-2, I might be a little bit disappointed at, but, you know, at the same time, you know, 3-1, I kind of into that. Quick question on the recruiting, Azubi or Gary Azubi. You guys were talking about Jeremiah Smith. Knowing that he as I guess we could all say, he's probably looks like the gem of this other recruit or generational kind of type of talent. He just, you know, seems like he's a monster. You know, with a guy like that, you know, we all know that Miami and all these other teams, they want him. They'll do anything legally, hopefully, you know, to get him. What about the quarterback from Chaminade, Bailey? Do they have any connection there? Because why can't I don't know if Miami is either recruiting or has evaluated him, but, I mean, he's there on the team with Chaminade. He must have some type of connection with Jeremiah. So why can't, for example, if you got to do what you got to do, if you want to get this guy, right, and you're doing your NIL, you're doing everything, I mean, they're texting every day or whatever, you know, and then you got, you know, I think Bailey, he's a developmental quarterback from what I see, but he has certain skills where he's tall, and he's on the top team there. You could put him in to redshirt, you know, are they recruiting him at all? Or can't you, like, try to recruit him and try to make would steer Jeremiah anyway to try to
get him? They recruited him. I mean, they evaluated him very hard earlier this season and during the off season. And Azubi, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I'm pretty sure they made the decision not to recruit him, that he just wasn't going to be good enough for what they need in the Miami program. But he is being recruited by other people.
The Miami kind of flirted with the idea, like Gary mentioned, you know, some parts of the summer and early parts of the season, and kind of that died down. But just talking to the Chaminade kids, you know, I spoke with Zaquan after the game, and there, you know, he knows it too. He's like, he says, you know, if Miami seriously recruited CJ, which is Cedric Bailey, they said that would literally kind of give Miami a better chance to land every single one of them.
Yeah.
And they asked, you know, what would it take for all the Chaminade guys to stay home and stay from Miami? And he literally said, if Miami actually recruited CJ, because I feel like they get the – I mean, obviously Cedric probably tells them how the recruiting is going. They feel like Miami isn't seriously recruiting him as a player, but instead of they're recruiting him as like, oh, he's going to be like kind of the final piece to get JJ, but they're not actually, you know, obviously like Gary said, evaluated him and don't see him fitting into that offensive team. I do have to agree with them. Obviously, his throwing motion is a little off. He kind of throws a little bit of sidearm, kind of, you know,
weird.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the thing, you know, Shannon Dawson loves the most, the clean throwing motion. He said this, you know, over the summer, you know, that's the type of quarterback he wants. You can fix a lot of things, but if the throwing motion is off, that's something that would be really hard to fix. But, you know, the kid produces at the end of the day with, obviously, he's
right.
You know, the best receiver in the country and JoJo Trader and a lot of weapons. But at the end of the day, he's making these plays. He's 29-2 over the last 3 years as a starter. He's won two state championships. You know, he's not, you know, just some run-of-the-mill scrum that just throws the ball up to some really good wide receivers. So, obviously, that's kind of a very sticky situation where you see the advantages of recruiting this kid to get, you know, the players that you want, but I feel like you can't recruit a kid just to kind of lure the rest of, you know, his teammates or this teammate in. That's kind of doing the kid himself a dishonor. And if you don't actually like the kid, I don't see I don't see kind of that being a thing that Miami does where they just recruit Cedric just to get Jeremiah. And if the kids know that that's happening, I feel like that's not going to help their situation either, unless they're genuinely interested in him, which I don't think they are at the time.
Well, I mean, they already have JoJo and Patterson. So it's not like that they don't recruit Chaminade. They recruit Chaminade hard. Here's what I'm going to say about this, Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things about recruiting some of these schools in South Florida, and Chaminade would certainly qualify in this, is you can't take kids that are not going to be able to play for you. The worst thing for Miami right now is that, say, like a Keontra Smith is not a first-team player. Because everybody in that Chaminade community, for example, they think that Keontra Smith should be starting because he's their guy. And, like, if you're Miami, and I'm just using that as an example. I mean, you could go on and on and on. And the point I'm making, you got to be really careful if you're Miami and you're recruiting these power schools in South Florida. Central would obviously qualify, American Heritage, St. Thomas. If you're recruiting those schools, you got to be really careful about the kids that you take from those schools. They need to be big-time players. because that's going to be the expectation. Because in high school, everybody thinks everybody's great, that everybody's going to go to college and going to be an All-American. But that's just not reality, okay? Azubi averaged 500 yards a game when he was in high school over at Fort Myers. But, you know, I mean, when it, I'm obviously kidding about that. It's giving Azubi a hard time. But, like, no, the point I'm making is you have to be really careful about what kids you take, particularly from those power schools that you're going to be looking to recruit every single year because they're going to have big-time players in those programs. And you get on the wrong side of the fence with those coaches, and it's going to make it tougher for you to recruit down the road. And, you know, there have been a couple Chaminade kids. You know, Thad Franklin comes to mind. That haven't made it at Miami and that were not maybe the best of evaluations at the time. And you can't afford for that to keep happening. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah.
So to take Cedric Bailey, who you don't think is good enough, and he's probably not. Like, is he as good as Emery Williams? Is he as good as Ja'Kari Brown? Is he as good as Judd Anderson? And you're making the evaluations that the answer to all three of those questions is no, then you absolutely cannot take him in this recruiting class.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Now, Zuby, would you say, like, the four wide receivers, and this is my last question, that Miami would want to probably take for if they had their choice for recruiting would be Carr, Smith, Chance, and JoJo? Are they would they take four if that's the four? If they could get the four?
Yeah, I would say they would definitely take those four in a heartbeat. But obviously you can't put all your eggs in one basket with Smith, you know, banking on him being the fourth guy. And a name that I always, for some reason, you know, I spoke with Kevin Beard at the Chaminade game a little bit. A name that always kind of gets brought up with our conversations is Ryan Wingo. And that's, I feel like I always see, you know, a new school is a leader from, Missouri is a leader from, Texas is a leader from. I feel like Miami isn't getting enough credit with the recruiting they're doing. Ryan Wingo, obviously, he's kind of, you know, not magnified as a Smith recruitment or as a Carr recruitment, but I feel like that's a guy. Kevin Beard really, really likes Ryan Wingo, and Ryan Wingo really, really likes Kevin Beard. But obviously, you know, those four, Carr, Smith, Trader, and Robinson would be the ideal four, and maybe, you know, if you can get a McCoy at the end to flip from Florida State, that's another guy that they like. But, you know, I feel like the dream four, like you mentioned, kind of Carr, Smith, Trader, and Robinson. And obviously, if a five-star guy like Ryan Wingo says he wants to commit to your program, I don't think you can say no to that either.
Well, I'll say one thing. Kevin Beard's all over Twitter right now, so something must be popping. His recruiter are tweeting and Beard's pictures and stuff. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. But thanks, guys, for your time. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Hey, thank you for being part of the show. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. Hit the 1 on your keypad if you want to come on the show. We do have room in the queue, so come on over and be part of tonight's show. Right now, let's go out to the 386. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, Gary, appreciate you taking my call.
Who's this?
This Will again.
Will?
Some of what I wanted to ask and talk about, you know, have already been touched on. But a few comments. I would like to see Rashard Smith more involved in the passing game. I mean, he just strikes me as a walking time bomb waiting to explode. And Isaiah Horton, he caught a beautiful touchdown against Texas A&M, and I don't even think he's been thrown to since that touchdown. I mean, what's going on? Is he in the doghouse? Or
no, he's not in the doghouse. I'll tell you what's been going on. Have you been watching Xavier Restrepo? Xavier Restrepo's playing at as high a level at receiver as just about anybody in the country, and that's what's going on. It's like, how do you take that guy off the field?
Hey, I agree. I mean, I will admit, you know, I didn't think much of Restrepo last year, but, you know, hey, I owe the guy an apology. I really do. Another thing I wanted to ask about, Mario Cristobal, he's not going to give you much information on, you know, injured players. And, you know, you've already touched on this tonight, but of the three defensive linemen that got hurt in the Texas A&M game, none of these guys are potentially gone for the season.
No. Not to our knowledge.
Okay. Well, like I said, you know, much of what I wanted to ask about tonight, you know, you've already touched on it. So Nigelie Kelly, what's the defensive tackle name that transferred in?
Branson Dean.
Okay, so like I said, none of these guys aren't particularly. Cause like I said, you don't give much information on injured players.
No, but
none of these guys.
Nigelie was in uniform last week. He played a couple plays. Branson Dean, I would be very surprised if we don't see him against Georgia Tech. I got to believe Messidor is back for Georgia Tech, unless there's something more there. But he traveled to the game in Philadelphia. So, I mean, if he were out for an extended period of time, I don't know that they would have him on the travel list. I mean, I'm assuming. And he would look like he was walking around fine. I mean, I got to think we'll see all of these guys. Mark Fletcher came back. I think we'll see them all against Georgia Tech. I'd be surprised if we didn't.
All right, well, I'm getting out of here on this question right here. Mario Cristobal was asked, may have been you, but he was asked to compare this team to past teams that have won championships, and his answer to that was the way we honor those teams is try to play like those teams played on the field. And my question is, seems like everybody has been dancing around the question, but I want to ask, you know, is that a fair comparison? Is Miami a legitimate title contender?
No, absolutely not.
What's the deal?
Not a fair comparison, and I can assure you, I did not ask that question because that question is crazy. Crazy, Will. Listen. One game at a time is the way everybody should be approaching this. There's a lot of they got five or six very tough games coming up here in the second two-thirds of the season. There's just not a lot of gimmies, okay? I mean, Virginia, I would say hopefully, you know, will be a gimme. I mean, you know, you would like to think that it would be. But, like, you know, when you look at these other games, I mean, when, you know, Georgia Tech, I mean – you're hoping is a gimme, but that's not a horrendous team. Boston College is dangerous at home, day after Thanksgiving, cold weather. There's not a free pass to me other than hopefully Virginia. I mean, I think you just got to take this thing one week at a time and, you know, evaluate it each week on face value.
So
I mean,
they
still have Miami projected as a 10-point underdog to Clemson, by the way. I mean, that could change, but right now Miami's projected as a 10-point underdog to Clemson and a 15-point underdog to FSU.
Okay, last question. I promise you, last question. Have you looked at anyone in the top 10? What's the one team in the top 10 right now that you would look at and say Miami has no business on the field with this team?
Well, let me pull those rankings up, and Zuby and I can comment on that for you. I would say Georgia, number one, no way. Michigan, number two. And Zuby, if you disagree with any of this, stop me. Michigan, number two. I would say highly unlikely at this point. Michigan's further ahead. Let's see. In one poll, you got Texas. Now, I'm not saying, Azubi, I'm not going to say no way to Texas because Texas really is not that much further along than Miami in their rebuild. They've done a really good job there. I mean, they went into Bama and beat Bama. and, you know, Sarkisian's a great coach and all that. But if you're looking at depth of rosters, I'm not sure that Texas is that far ahead of Miami. So I wouldn't say no way to Texas. What would you do?
I kind of have to disagree with you. I feel like Texas is a pretty legit team to go into Tuscaloosa and beat Alabama, you know, pretty sound like that. That says a lot. And obviously Alabama obviously has, you know, their little quarterback struggles right now. But from the years of recruiting they've had and the guys that they have loaded on that roster, that's still a team that's going to be competing, you know, in the SEC to the very end. And you'll probably see them maybe in the SEC championship down the road, just how weak the SEC West is looking right now. But I do like Texas. I for some reason, I don't know, maybe it's just, you know, me, I never feel like Michigan is as good as people advertise them. Obviously, on paper, you know, they have that team that they're coming back from another college football playoff appearance. But I feel like Michigan cannot win big games under Harbaugh. And for some reason, I feel like out of those teams, I feel like it'd be Georgia right now and Texas are two teams. I'm not saying Miami can't play with Texas, but I'd take Texas over Michigan right now for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. Does Ohio State scare you, Zuby?
No, not at all.
So
you're saying Georgia, playing Georgia and Michigan, the game would turn out to be like the Colorado-Oregon game?
Possibly. I think it would be tough, you know. But I'm not convinced Georgia's winning this thing again. I mean, it's hard enough to win it twice. They're trying to win it three straight years. I mean, I'm not convinced yet that that's going to happen. But the point is, Miami, to be that level of team week after week, it's just not there yet. The depth is not there. The individual elite talent is not there. I mean, like, listen, we're sitting here talking, for example, about Xavier Restrepo. He's having a great season, great receiver. He's not elite, okay? Like, there's not a lot of elite on this Miami team. Just not. I mean, just being honest. I mean, the best player, if you ask the NFL scouts who's the best player at Miami, they're going to tell you Leonard Taylor. Leonard Taylor shows up once a year for the holidays, man. It's like he's not dominating anything, I mean, against any of these teams. But the NFL scouts would tell you he's the best player. Tyler Van Dyke is playing at a pretty high level. No one's going to sit here and tell you he's one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the country. The running backs are doing a great job by committee. There's none of them that would be a first-round draft pick right now, I don't think. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's not a lot of elite. Your best defensive lineman can't get off the injured list. Forget about the DBs. I mean, Cam's been hurt. You know, Cam, you know, some people would say Cam's elite, but, like, I mean, there's just not a lot of elite talent in the program right now. And there's a lot of good players that are trying to band together with really good coaching and win as many games as they can. And I don't want to be a cliche, but I think you got to take this thing one week at a time and just see how things are at that moment.
All right, Gary. Hey, once again, I appreciate you taking my call. Great show, and keep me on hold.
All right, well, thank you as always for being part of it. 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you would like to come on the show. And now we're going to go to the 727. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
Hey, Gary. It's Jake from St. Pete. How you doing today?
Hold on, Jake. How you doing this week?
Doing good. Hey, I want to start off with a question to Zuby, and it's kind of been alluded to earlier in some iteration or another, but do you think there is a genuine chance of flipping Jeremiah Smith, or is this just another Brandon Innes where, okay, yeah, I'm gonna do the dance and play along, but at the end of the day, Innes never had any intention of coming here last year. Granted, the results were pretty piss poor, but is he the latest iteration? And I don't even say this is a negative to Mario. Obviously, his recruiting is pretty on point to this point, but Just another one of these South Florida kids that just for whatever reason is going to do the dog and pony show for the next 2-3 months and then just, you know, like, yeah, no, I'm going where I was going.
Yeah, no, I have to say I do think this is much different from the inner situation. First off, because like you mentioned, the results on the field last year, we saw the wide receivers. They couldn't, you know, catch a cold in Antarctica, you know, like it was just horrendous last year. And as a, you know, top receiver, if you see that and then you look at Ohio State and what they've been doing the last 2 years, that's kind of like, you know, that's the easy choice for any recruit. With this year, I feel like it's completely different with Jeremiah because this is the second year Mario's, you know, had to recruit him. Second full year with Ennis, it was kind of just that 1 year, and you don't have much to show him when your receiver is looking like that. So I feel like that was an easy choice for him just to kind of go up to Ohio State. But kind of going back to Jeremiah thing, 2 years, you know, heavily involved with this staff, with Mario Cristobal, and now in the second year, you're seeing the results that he said that, you know, that you told him about last year. You're seeing the receivers making that vast improvement from last year. You're seeing the offense look very, very good under Shannon Dawson, someone that has a good connection to, you know, Geno Smith, who his older cousin is. You know, when Dawson got hired, Geno Smith was talking, you know, all good about, you know, Shannon Dawson. That's just another little connection that they have here. You have JoJo Trader committed, you know, your fellow wide receiver, Sean Lam, one of your best friends. And all these little things, I feel like Miami is putting together a very good case to have him, you know, stay home and not go to Columbus and go play for those guys up there. And the last kind of thing I have is just Kevin DeBeer has been doing a phenomenal job at recruiting these guys, not only in South Florida, but just wide receivers across the country. Very likable guy. He talks to these kids in a different manner, in a different way that I always ask them, because I always ask guys, you know, what stands about Coach Kevin Beard, and they always say the same thing. He kind of relates football to life in like no other coach does in the country, and you just hear these kids rave about him, kids that are committed elsewhere, kids that are committed to Miami, kids that are considering Miami. So, like I said, I feel like Miami kind of has the perfect storm with production on the field, 2 years with Mario Cristobal recruiting him now, your best friend's committed to the program, your running mate at wide receiver, and, you know, a bunch of other little things. I feel like this bid to actually flip him is much more legit than what we saw with Brandon Innes last year.
So what would you put your – and, Gary, feel free to chime in too, but I know Azubi's pretty tight on this one too, but I'd be curious either of your takes. All right, Miami goes 10-2. We look solid like we have. Two close losses. Who knows? Let's say the road losses. We lose by a touchdown to North Carolina and a touchdown to Florida State. What do you think the odds are he's a Hurricane?
Here's what I'm going to tell you. This is – I'll chime in. I think once December gets here, that not coming to Miami will be the most ridiculously difficult decision that any human being – has ever had to make, and in the shoes of Jeremiah Smith, because he is going to have an opportunity here to own the city. The NIL for him between Miami and other businesses locally and stuff is going to be off the charts, okay? There is no chance that any school in the country is going to be able to offer the Jeremiah Smith family and Jeremiah Smith a better situation than what Miami is going to be able to offer in December. So, like, this is a generational talent. This is an all-in talent. This is like the Moss brothers going out and getting Messi, okay? And
I'm glad you said that, because I was going to follow up and ask, like,
you're interrupting me. I was on a roll, man. But what I'm trying to say is,
I'm
joking with you. But like, what I'm trying to say to everybody here is that, like, there is like him saying no when it comes push to shove, and signing day, I think, is what, the 21st of December or whatever that Wednesday is. Like, for him to not sign with Miami on that day and go to Ohio State or whatever is going to be the most difficult decision to say no to that any human being on the planet has ever had to face. That's my opinion. So I think there's a great chance that Jeremiah Smith ends up at Miami.
Well, I mean, what you were saying to the NIL, like, I admittedly had never actually seen the kid play prior to about 2 weeks ago, but watching him against that, what's the Bergen that they played, which is a legit, that's a good program. And then Miami Central, I mean, he's just, he's on another level. I mean, he is a plug and play college starter. He is just so much better than even
Azubi took a video of him the other night, okay, at the game, at the Central game. Azubi gets this great video of Jeremiah Smith coming right at him, making a one-handed touchdown catch. This is a high school kid, right? Okay, Azubi puts it on our TikTok. We had over we had 1.2 million views of that video within 24 hours of putting it on our TikTok.
Jesus. That's
what this kid brings to the table. He is going to set records. He is going to be a his NIL value is going to be off the charts. And I don't believe
Travis Hunter level. I mean, that kid's a generational player.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what the numbers were for that Nico quarterback kid that went to, I think, Tennessee. But I'm telling you right now, like, this kid's NIL value is going to be way up there, and I do not believe that Miami will get outbid by anybody. That's just my opinion.
Love hearing that because, that's the kid you just – and you know what? To me, too, that's just the state of Miami bringing that back, that – You're putting up a pretty nice fence there if you get that kid. Because, every year for the last, 15 years, we lose. We'll get our fair share of Florida talent. There's no doubt about it, and South Florida talent. But we never seem to bag that top kid. And if there's a kid to go all in on, he just seems like he is the one. You just got to figure out a way to get him.
This is Michael Irvin and Andre Johnson. This is that level of player.
Want to chime in on this one. Kind of going off what you just said, I feel like if you land Jeremiah Smith, flip him from Ohio State, like you mentioned, build defense, and that shows every other major wide receiver recruit, not only in South Florida, but across the country that, is infatuated with Ohio State and, blah, 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 Ohio State, that shows them that, hey, I don't have to go to this magical fairy tale Columbus, which is apparently the best college city, whatever in the world. I can go to Miami. I feel like if he commits to Miami and they end up flipping him, that's going to be probably the biggest, best thing that can happen for Miami for recruiting, for on the field, for everything. Like the impact that flip, if it happens, will be just like you won't be able to measure it. It'll be just insane for not only this class, but the classes following it and every wide receiver coming out of South Florida in the next 2 to 3 years.
Well, the other thing, too, that I think that impacts, too, is let's be realistic. Tyler Van Dyke is almost assuredly going to the NFL unless he really falls on his face over the next 8 games. To me, that raises the bar on the portal, going after a quarterback in the portal. I mean, maybe Emery Williams is the guy. Maybe he's not. I don't know. He's playing mop-up detail. He looks good for a freshman, but he is playing mop-up detail against some pretty crappy teams, so I'm not ready to anoint him, the next coming of whoever, but Ken Dorsey or, whatever. But to me, I think that's a big plus. If we return one or two of our top wide receivers, plus having that guy in, I mean, you got to plug and play to put up numbers, to put up yards, and I think that that really puts us in a real nice place to pick up a top-notch transfer quarterback as well. I'm thinking look at Michael Penix is doing out in Washington. Hey, you guys were talking about teams that scare me. If we had to play Washington, that guy scares the crap out of me because the offense that guy's putting up, the passing yards, it's nuts. So with that said, I'm just going to pick a little gripe here with the way the show's been going. A lot of people still just real negative on Miami, and maybe it's the shell shock of the last 20 years, no doubt about it. I was awfully pessimistic going into the season, but There's a couple of things that I just, you know, to me, I think are relevant to, A, we have, number one, this is entertaining to watch, this football team. Are we going to go 12-0? I would bet not, but, you know, are 10-11 wins possible? Yes, they are, 100%. But the team is just, regardless, maybe they go 9-3, but this is an entertaining team to watch. I haven't, like, been pissed off at all this year. I think Gary, you know, over the years, I call them usually pissed off. I'm entertained.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, this is the problem. I'm not one of those guys. I've told you this in the past. Look, do I want to win national championships? Hell yeah. But most importantly, I want my 3 or 4 hours I spend on Saturday, or even more when I'm driving down to the games, going to the home games, and the money I put into that and time and effort, I just want to be entertained. And this is entertaining. Like, call it a win. I mean, you know, if they swing off 8 losses, my tone could change very quickly. But, like, being competitive, beating the teams you're supposed to beat, looking good doing it, and again, hopefully building towards something extra. But for what it's worth, consider me entertained and consider me very, very happy with the progress. But then I'll take that a step further. This year, I just don't see a team that, like, you know, you talk about depth and whatnot. I don't know. Like, Georgia seems like they got plenty of holes on their team. Their quarterback's a problem. Their wide receivers are a problem. You know, they haven't played anyone good, and they've had a couple of rough goes at it with South Carolina, and even UAB was playing them tough in the first half this week. So it's Michigan looks pretty legit, so does Texas and whatnot. But I think this year might be one of those years where you got a two-loss team winning the national championship, kind of like 2007, big-time rarity. But, you know, with Miami, like, Cam Kinsens goes down. How many teams in the country are going to be able to replace a Cam Kinsens? Or even, I'll have to admit, I almost had a heart attack when Matt Lee went down. Luckily, it doesn't look bad. But, like, you know, a player like that, how many teams have got that just sitting on the bench waiting their turn, especially in this day and age with the portal? And I think we might see some more parity because of the portal, because you don't get to develop that kind of depth anymore, because guys who can start want to start, and we'll find a place to do it.
Georgia plays nobody, man. They have the easiest schedule you'll ever see in your life. They're going undefeated. They won't be challenged until they get to the SEC championship game, and that's where I think they'll run into a little bit of trouble. But even if they lose that game, they'll probably still be in the 14 playoff. So somebody's going to have to beat these guys twice. So we'll see. But I can't believe that they're going to win the national title this year. I refuse to believe.
No, I don't see it. Their offense is
going to win three straight. I mean, three straight is wow. If they could pull that off, that would be ridiculous. All right, Jake, let me let you run so other people can get on. But thank you,
as
always, for being part of the show, man.
Appreciate it as always. Thank you, Gary.
All right, Jake. Zuby, I didn't get a chance to challenge him on this. I didn't really want to because I didn't want to get long-winded. But, like, I don't think that the Canes fan is being negative at all. I think, if anything, there's false positivity just because of how easy these games have gone. And, you know, I think that there's an assumption now that they're all going to go like this, and they're not. They're just flat not going to. I don't get the impression that people are negative at all. Do you?
No, I would say negative, but I do feel like people are, I don't know if optimistic is the word, but just from, you know, going from last year to now, like, people are just happy to see this team kind of clicking on all cylinders. Obviously, like you mentioned, you know, the opponents are going to get much tougher from here on out, but I feel like people are just enjoying the happiness that they were deprived of last year after getting blown out by Middle Tennessee State at home. And now, you know, you're 4-0 heading to ACC play instead of 2-2 looking real suspect and injury riddled. So I feel like kind of that's the kind of vibe in the fan base right now. Just happy to be where you're at, you know, compared to last season.
Yeah, he's right about one thing, though, Jake. This team is entertaining. There's no doubt about that. Very entertaining.
Let's go out to the 352. You're live on Kingsport Live.
Do you want to be a husband? Why are you got so much cologne?
352.
Okay,
hey, man, you're really tight. I'm going to come back to you because it sounds like you're being disciplined or something there. Let's go out to the 845. You're live on Kingsport Live.
Yeah, Gary, how you doing?
Hey, what's up, Greg? How are you?
I got a bunch of things very quickly. Number one, you want to give me 10 points? I'll take Miami against Clemson. No way Clemson's a 10 point. Ask Lee Sterling when you have him on this week what the line
right.
would be for that game. And FSU also. Okay, first of all, our offense is playing well. But how many passes have we thrown to the tight ends and the running backs?
Hardly any. What does that tell
we
you, Greg? What does that tell you?
Tight ends.
What does that tell you that you're not seeing it? You're not seeing that. What does that tell you?
There's more in the offense that hasn't been seen yet.
100%. You will see the tight ends and running backs in the passing game before this thing is all said and done, I assure you.
Okay. My next point. We're supposed to be scared of North Carolina. The last two times we played at North Carolina, we lost on a 4th-and-17 play. You remember that? We gave up a 4th-and-17 at the end of that game.
Yep.
And then last time, Van Dyke put up 40 points on him. And last year he threw for 495 yards. So don't tell me with this offensive line, we're not going to score a lot of points on North Carolina. Okay.
I personally think North Carolina is going to score a lot of points on us too, Greg. They match up very, very well. Very, very well. It's going to be what I think is going to probably be a night game on the road in Chapel Hill. That is going to be an enormously difficult out for the Canes. I'm not saying they can't do it. I don't think we know whether they can or can't yet, to be quite honest. But that is going to be a very difficult out.
You're telling me we're not going down there with a much better team than we have the last few times?
We are.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean a night game in Chapel Hill against that team with that quarterback and our deficiencies where they are is not going to make it a very difficult game to win. And you don't have to agree. I'm just telling you what I think is going to be tough.
Okay. App State almost beat North Carolina in double overtime. Okay. So, all right. Let's go down to the next point. The defense. There's no way in hell when we play Florida State we can survive with Ta'Quarry Couch and Darryl Porter playing corner against those 6'4" receivers.
But you think they can survive North Carolina, Greg?
What?
You think they can survive North Carolina but not Florida State?
Florida State, I know they can. They have no height. We need height. These guys are 6'5".
Yeah, those receivers are really good. I agree. Those receivers are very good.
Okay. All right. My next point. I wouldn't be shocked if you see Brandon Ennis at Miami next year. The kid is riding the pine there.
Yep.
I'm sure he's not thrilled about it. Okay, and I'm sure we would take him if he wanted to come.
Oh, yeah, 100% they would take a Brandon in his transfer.
Okay, and my last point. As great as Jeremiah Smith is, I think Ellis Robinson would be a more important recruit. That guy is an unbelievable corner.
Ooh,
that's
man, they're both very good. Ellis Robinson doesn't change a game the way Jeremiah Smith changes a game. You agree, Azubi?
Yeah. No, Ellis Robinson is an elite player, but if you watch Jeremiah Smith on a football field live, I've had the chance to watch both of them play live, it's a different ball game. Obviously, you know, they've played against each other, and it was a great battle, but just the way Jeremiah Smith draws so much attention, draws, you know, like when we talk about an elite player where a defense, like, keeps a, you know, offense or defensive coordinator up at night, that's Jeremiah Smith. He's a game changer for sure. But I'm not saying Ellis Robinson isn't, just Jeremiah Smith, I feel like, is at a different level.
All right. Thank you. Thanks again. I'll talk to you next time.
All right, Greg, always a pleasure, man. Thanks for being part of the show. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550. You hit the 1 on your keypad if you'd like to come on the show. Let me see if our friend out here in the 352 is ready to talk to us. 352, you're live again on Kane Sport Live.
Gary.
Yeah, man. Who's this?
What's up? This is Brandon. I'm from out of Gainesville, Florida.
Brandon, how are you, man? You got to tell your wife or girlfriend she's got to stop yelling at you that it's time for you to go on Kane Sport Live, and it's Tuesday night, and you need your peace.
Okay, I got a question, man. What is it? What is the chance you think? I know you. Everybody's gonna ask you the same question, but what chance you think we got really at getting Jeremiah Smith?
See, we were just talking about that. You were getting yelled at. You were getting yelled at when I tried to bring you on the show a few minutes ago, but yeah, we just got done talking about that. I personally think
what I'm saying is, by being in Gainesville area, a lot of Gator fans are saying that he's coming close to coming to the Gators to play with DJ Lagway, which is the 5-star number one quarterback that's coming to Florida. So there's been a lot of rumors around town that he's here like damn near every week.
I mean, if you want my opinion, I think this Gator season is going to end with about a 6-win season. I think that there's going to be a lot of noise in Gainesville about Billy Napier at that point. He's not going to get fired this year, but there's going to be a lot of noise. I think that that's going to hurt their recruiting effort, which is in a very good place right now. But I think come December that they're not going to be in as strong of a position as they are right now. I mean, I'm looking at the Gator schedule right now, and I would say, you know, right now they're 3-1. I don't think they win at Kentucky this weekend. We'll see what happens. I don't think they win at South Carolina. I know they won't win against Georgia. Maybe they'll beat Arkansas. I don't think they win at LSU. I don't know about Missouri. I don't think they beat Florida State. That's 5 more losses. So if I'm right, I think it's 5. If I'm right about this, that's 6-6. And that's if they don't lose to like a Missouri or an Arkansas. I don't see them winning those road games that they have. You know, Kentucky,
okay.
South Carolina, LSU, I don't see them winning those. And I don't see them beating Florida State. So their season, I mean, they stole one against a Tennessee team that I would have said I don't think they'll beat Tennessee. But I think their season is going to be 6-6. And I think that's not going to make the people in Gainesville very happy. And I think that there's going to be a lot of noise around their program.
Okay, Gary, the next question I have. Okay, some Miami Hurricanes fans, I'm not going to say all, but some Miami Hurricanes fans feel like in order for Miami to actually be back in the future and win national championships, we need a blue-chip 5-star quarterback. Okay, so now we got Judd Anderson, and we got what's the other kid from Atlanta?
Luke Nickel.
What's the other quarterback?
Oh, Luke Nickel, yeah, in the next class.
Yeah, Luke Nickel. Okay, so we got Luke Nickel. And we got Judd Anderson. So they're great quarterbacks. I think Luke Nickel ceiling is higher. But what I'm saying is that some Hurricane fans I talked to are still not satisfied with the future. How do you feel about the quarterback situation with recruiting blue-chip quarterbacks for Miami?
Here's what I think. I think that they will go in December, and they will recruit the best quarterback in the portal that they can get. And I think they will shoot for the moon, okay? Because I think they will bring that guy in to compete with Emory Williams and Ja'Kari Brown to be the starter next season, okay? That's what I think is going to happen. I think that they were not very well positioned in this cycle to recruit a five-star quarterback because they were coming off a 5-7 season where their offense was atrocious. Now that they're establishing a much better offense, Tyler Van Dyke's having a good season that hopefully will continue. Quarterbacks are going to know, I can go to Miami and I can punch my ticket to the next level in Shannon Dawson's offense, with Shannon Dawson's play calling, and with the skill players that they're able to surround me with, that hopefully will include Jeremiah Smith. And I think that they'll be in a good position to do that. I think that whoever that best quarterback in the portal is, that Miami will have a great chance of getting. Now, Emory Williams is very good, but is he going to beat out, you know, a guy that's already, you know, a little further ahead of him in his career? I don't know the answer to that question, but I think you got to make him do it. I think you got to bring the competition in. I do not think that Ja'Cari Brown is good enough competition. I think you have to bring in a better quarterback out of the portal to compete with those two guys and Judd Anderson. That's my opinion. Before, what do you think?
I would say, yeah, before we move on to this portal talk, I find this so fascinating. So if you look at the top passing yards, you know, who has the top passing yards in the country, I think out of the top ten, seven of them are transfer quarterbacks. So number one, Michael Penix Jr., transfer from Indiana to Washington. Number two, Shedeur Sanders, transfer from Jackson State to Colorado. Number three, Cameron Ward, Washington State, transfer from Incarnate World in Texas. The list goes on and on. Jaden Daniels, LSU, transfer from Arizona State. Spencer Rattler, transfer. JT Daniels, transfer. Sam Hartman, transfer. You go to 11, Dylan Gabriel, transfer. You go to 13, Mikey Keene, transfer. 14, Caleb Mays. No, Williams. All the top quarterbacks in the country right now, passing yards-wise, are all transfer quarterbacks. So I feel like Miami would kind of be dumb to not test the waters in the transfer portal to bring in a quarterback to compete right away at Miami, because the formula's working. You see these quarterbacks that transfer, that go to different programs, that fit the team better, that found success, and that recipe's worked for the last 3 or 4 years in college football. So I really, really do think Miami's going to dip in that portal and try to go after the top dog in the transfer portal this offseason, no matter what
happens. Do you know who I really, really want? Malik Murphy from Texas. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a very interesting situation, too.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but I'm going to get on out of here, man. Azubi, man, you're doing a good job, man, to be new on the team, man. And I look forward to seeing Kane Sport tomorrow, man. You are.
All right, thank you, man. Thank you for being part of the show. Yeah, I mean,
isn't that stat fascinating? If you look at it, 7 out of the top 10 passers in the country are transfer quarterbacks, and there might be more.
Yeah.
Just off the top of my head, 7 out of the top 10 are transfer quarterbacks, which is crazy.
100%. And, you know, I look at a kid, I'm just looking at it right now because, you know, I mean, I assumed what you were saying even before you said it, and I'm looking at, like, number 6, and I have not seen this kid play one single minute, okay? But there's a kid by the name of A.J. Swan at Vanderbilt. He's a sophomore quarterback. He is number 6 in the country in passing yards at Vanderbilt, okay? That kid's going to be in the transfer portal at the end of the season. There is no question about it. Now, I don't know if he's better than Emory Williams or, you know, I can't comment on that at all. But, you know, there's a kid, a junior. Was Cam Ward a transfer, Zuby?
Cam Ward was a transfer. He came from FCS, either Division II or FCS school, Incarnate World in Texas. He's killing at Washington State. He's amazing.
How about this kid, Braden Shager at Hawaii?
That's one I'm unsure about.
He's a junior at Hawaii. He's number 4 in the country in passing yards at Hawaii. Okay, so if he hasn't already transferred, he's going to be in the transfer portal. A.J. Swan from Vanderbilt, I guarantee you, will be in the transfer portal. There's no way he's staying at Vanderbilt. He's putting up those kind of numbers at Vanderbilt. He's going to have a lot of value in the transfer portal. There's a kid at Fresno State, Mickey Keene, who's putting up big yards.
He transferred from UCF.
He did, okay. Then he probably would not be a transfer candidate again, I wouldn't think. But the point I'm making is there are going to be guys in the portal that are going to have a year or 2 years of eligibility who have played college football that might want to come to Miami and compete with Emory Williams, Judd Anderson and Ja'Kari Brown. I mean, listen, Emory Williams is a true freshman this year. You're not going to take a team like Miami's going to have next year and just say Emory Williams is going to be our quarterback. We're not going to bring any competition in whatsoever for him. I don't believe that that will be the case. I think that they will go out and get the best quarterback they can get in the portal. All right, 563-999-3550, 563-999-3550 is your number. Let me see. I got all carried away with that conversation. I forgot where we are in the queue. All right, here we are. Let's go out to the 419. You're live on Kane Sport Live.
How you doing, Gary? It's Ohio Kane.
Hey, what's up, Ohio Kane? How you doing, man?
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about Jeremiah Smith. I think we're sitting in just the right spot for him. I mean, obviously Ohio State hasn't committed right now, but you look at the receiving core we have this year, all three receivers that we have started are, doing infinitely better under Kevin Beard. So he's obviously had a major impact on the guys we have now. Not to mention the team's playing better as a whole, but to get into the Ohio State, I think I called here a couple weeks ago, and I said Ohio State is sitting on Larry Coker 2.0, and I still believe that, by the way. I mean, you watched the Notre Dame game last week. It was more or less what Notre Dame failed to do than Ohio State just went out and took the game. I mean, after the game, the guy went on this big tirade of Lou Holtz this, Lou Holtz that. The truth be told, he knew Lou Holtz made a true statement. There was a lot of truth to what Lou Holtz said. I mean, Ohio State went from being the bully in the Big Ten. So now they're maybe second. They're definitely second best right now, maybe even third with Penn State coming up. I mean, really, Ohio State is starting to slip, and people are starting to see it right now. They don't have the physicality they once have. And I really, truly believe after these next, you got Maryland coming up, which Maryland has Tua's younger brother. They put up big points. You've got Penn State still. You got Michigan. I mean, Jeremiah Smith is – I really do believe with Miami playing the way they're playing – and Ohio State, I think, is – I really do. Ohio State's seen its ceiling under Urban Meyer. Their ceiling has been reached. It's gone. And I definitely think that, the way we're playing and while I talk about the luck that we've had this year with injuries, I mean, we had our injuries, but listen, if we're going to have injuries, that's the time I want to have them. I mean, you had it for Temple and you had it for Bethune-Cookman. Hopefully we get these guys ready and healthy, but I kind of am like on the same side as with Greg as far as the rest of our schedule. You look at our schedule, and obviously I'm a realist from a point I realize we don't have depth and that we're one hit from a big problem. I mean, if something happened to Van Dyke, we would have serious issues. But at the same time, I look at our team, we're getting healthy, and if we're healthy, I don't see anyone on our schedule that we can't play with. Don't get me wrong. I'm concerned, and I respect our schedule. But you look at Drake May in North Carolina, I'm with Greg on that. I'm concerned, and listen, I know Drake May's an outstanding quarterback, but his wide receivers aren't what they've been. And they don't have a Josh Downs on there anymore. I think it's going to be a tough game, but I'm going to sit down that night, and I fully expect that we're going to come out of there with a W. I really do. I think our team is entirely better. Our offensive line is really what's making this team go. I mean, it's ridiculous. Van Dyke wasn't even touching that game. And listen, when we get our run game going, and we haven't even brought, like you said, we haven't started using our tight ends, the running backs. Just so much offense hasn't come out. And defensively, yeah, I know we've seemed to have problems, but we're going to schematically play much different against North Carolina than we did against Temple and these other teams. We're going to have our three linemen, hopefully, on the defensive side of the ball back in the game. We have Cam Kitchens back out there. I feel really comfortable against that team. And 10 points is absurd to give us against Clemson. We can play with Clemson just as well. Now, what Greg did mention was the same concern I had with Florida State, the size of their receivers and the fact what Travis does with his feet to buy an extra amount of time. It is scary. The size of those receivers is scary. He could throw jump balls, and those kids can just go do things. North Carolina doesn't have receivers like Florida State. Honestly, that's the game that concerns me the most, that like really scares me. But the Clemson and North Carolina, they're back-to-back. I don't know. I think we play with either of those teams. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with what you're saying, but they would say the same thing about Miami, too. And Sure. You know, you have to ask the question, is Miami at its state of development to win every single game and be at its best every single week? I mean, we haven't seen a game with a lot of turnovers. We haven't seen a game with penalties. We haven't seen a game where just things just don't go their way yet. I mean, all these things figure to happen. I mean, look at Notre Dame last week against Ohio State. They're winning the game. The game should be over. They give up that pass. And then two straight plays, they only had 10 guys on the field. Their coaches screwed up, and all of a sudden they lose the game. I mean, like, stuff just happens in sporting events and in games. And, you know, to just I can't sit here and assume that Miami's going 12-0. I just can't, you know. So like, you know, I know that there are going to be some tough weeks ahead. I know that 4, 5, or 6 of these games are probably going to go into the fourth quarter, and – you know, you hope you can win the greater majority of them and have a great season that you can catapult to even better recruiting and get kids like Jeremiah Smith that can take you to the even next level. But it is going to be a very exciting, wild ride here in October and November. That there's no doubt in my mind about.
Also, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, but I was also going to ask you, I don't know much about this card kid. Do you know anything about him as a player? The kid from D, like, what style of player he is? I know he's supposed to be a smallish side receiver, but I don't know anything about, you know, I was just curious, what are his big attributes that make him as good as he's rated?
Azubi, you probably looked at him a little bit.
Yeah, so he's a real good route runner with solid, solid hands. He doesn't drop many passes, and he just makes the plays as a wide receiver. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I saw something, he's kind of closing in on the county record for reception. So just a guy that, you know, when he gets the ball, he gets it. He's not going to make too many mistakes. I think 6'1", about a 190, 180. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100% sure on it. And ranked top 70 in the country. So he's been a guy that's been committed for Georgia for over a year now, a year and some change. So he's obviously kind of fallen under the radar since he has been committed elsewhere. But definitely a guy that Miami is really, really interested. You can see they sent Cody Waddell out to his high school to talk to him. His coaches said he's doing a visit for Georgia, so the interest is mutual. But definitely a solid wide receiver. Obviously, I said this, you know, a few weeks back, you know, Miami can't put all their, you know, marbles in one basket recruiting South Florida wide receivers. They have to venture out. There's other talented wide receivers across the country, and they're doing just that with NICAR. So definitely a kid to watch and a name to look at for the next 2 weeks.
Okay, okay. Do you know anything speed-wise? I know Georgia, on their site, I looked at their site, and they were really disappointed their mods about losing him. They really – but they didn't – nobody really said anything. Is he a burner? Does he have – or just normal speed? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, so no, I haven't been able to kind of gauge that from watching the film, really. If he had elite speed, you'd obviously be able to tell kind of, you know, off-rip or off-watching the guy, so I haven't, you know, been able to gauge that. But like you mentioned, Georgia people are very, very, you know, devastated about this loss. So, you know, obviously not good for them, but good signs for other schools that's recruiting him. And he is, like I mentioned, a top 70 receiver, and that has been very productive throughout his entire high school career, closing in on that reception record. So definitely a guy that, you know, I feel like Miami evaluated, has been evaluating for a long time and really liking, or kind of putting that full court press on him now.
Okay, okay. Well, I thank you for your information. I thank you guys for having me on. We'll
all right,
see you next couple weeks, though.
Thank you, man.
All right,
thank you.
Take care of yourself.
Thank you for
all
being
right.
Part of the show. All right, last call of the night. Let's go out to the 786. You're live on Canesport Live.
Hey, what's up, Gary?
Doing good. Who's this?
Hurricane coming.
What's up, man? Talk to us.
Oh, okay. I hear everybody talking about Drake May, Florida State receivers. With that being said, now you know they do have to stop our offense too. So, who would you say have the better set of receivers? Texas A&M, Florida State, North Carolina?
Florida State.
Okay. With that,
that's what I would say. I would say Florida State,
okay.
Then Texas A&M.
Okay. I would agree with that, but I would sort of kind of put Texas A&M maybe ahead, and why I would say that.
Yeah, you know what? The only problem is the Florida State receivers are big. Like, they're big.
Yeah.
You know, Evan Stewart's a great receiver, but those two guys at Florida State are just a physical load to handle.
But here's what balances it out. they will drop the ball. They're going to get, yeah, especially number 14, he's going to give you 2-3 drops a game. He's going to give you that. Like, without a doubt, that's just a proven fact. He's been doing that since last year. He's been doing that this year. It's like, Florida State is a nice team, don't get me wrong, but they have the 50-some ranked defense. Like I said, they have big receivers or whatever the case may be. They have Travis Benjamin, whatever. They have who they have. But the flip side to that coin, they also have to stop us. They got to stop us. And the thing I like about us compared to before, the coordinators. Say it again, the coordinators. They make all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We pretty much, other than the offensive line, we pretty much had the same receivers, running backs, everything from last year, with a few additions. But it's like, I looked at Florida State, looked at Clemson, I saw North Carolina, such a so-so. It's nobody to me that can't be beat. Like, in the beginning of the season, yeah, I had my doubts. But right now, don't nobody in the ACC scare me, period. Because they always say what UM would have to do. Flip side to that coin, they also have to stop us. Remember that now. They also have to stop us. And then that's the thing.
No,
if we don't shoot ourselves in the foot and just have costly turnovers, penalties, et cetera, I like us against whoever. Like, even like what you said with Georgia. Georgia didn't look unbeatable. It's just South Carolina just, I don't know what happened to them. They just laid down in the second half. That's all it is. It's no team out there that's unbeatable. And this is the one thing, like, you hear all the so-called experts, this, that, and the third. That's why you play the game. You got to settle it on the field. Like, you really got to get it down on the field when it counts. All the experts, all the whoever, you could assume who going to win. Every week, Gary, right or wrong, every week in college football, every week on the week, it's an upset, right or wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're all the professional shit. Obviously, they're wrong. But with that being said, it's nobody that scares me now, just looking at what we have now. And it's understandable. We do need the depth. But what about this, Gary? It's a possibility now. We got banged up with the Temple game or whatever the case may be, the Bethune-Cookman game. But now, just say, a dead clock right twice a day. What if we go through the rest of the season injury-free? Now what?
Yeah, well, that's what needs to happen, to be honest with you. I mean, there's a few spots where if they have injuries, there's a big problem. Yeah. Offensive line is one of them. I mean, if Matt Lee had gone down, oh, my goodness. Quarterback, obviously, is another. I wouldn't want to lose too much on the D-line. Linebacker, obviously. You wouldn't want to lose Francisco Mago. I mean, you know, Cam Kitchens being out is a big drop-off. I mean, like, there's just not a lot of room there, man. Like, yeah, you can't have injuries.
Yeah, no, that's why I say if we were to be lucky and go through the rest of the season injury free, which is hard, because I don't know.
Hard,
I think,
yeah.
I damn near threw my remote at the TV when I seen Matt Lee got hurt. I'm just like, he's got to be. But with that being said, when the kid Rodriguez came in, I was just watching him. I wasn't watching no plays. I just wanted to look at the line. I would say the kid held his own. I mean, regardless, relative to the competition, he came in and he did what he was supposed to do. So, you know. And then that's the thing. Like, we say depth, this and that. The third, you can have 20 years, 100 years in experience of anything it is you do.
Mm.
You had to get that first hour. you had to get that first day. You had to get that first week of experience. So as we playing games and the players are getting in there, they're making their mistakes, they're doing what they do. I guess they go in the film room, they study, show them where they can make mistakes, and then we just go from there. But we can only build depth if they're on the field. You can have a million five stars. You can't put but 11 on the field at a time. So it's all about whoever on the field at that time. So all we really need is whoever's stepping on the field, like they say, don't act like you're number two. Act like you're a star. And if, guess what? If you stay ready, you'll never have to get ready. That's that. You can put me on hold, Gary.
All right, man. Thank you for being part of the show. All right, Azubi, we had a few questions that were and topics that were submitted on the message boards at canesport.com that we'll try to cover here real quick. MSK Fish wants our overall assessment of the linebacker group so far. Man, I'm going to be raw on this one. I have not been overwhelmed. I think Francisco Malgoa has been pretty darn good, but I don't think he's been as good as I thought he would be in pass coverage. I think he can do a lot better than what he's been doing in pass coverage, and hopefully he will as the season goes on. Azubi, your thoughts on the linebackers? Did I lose Azubi?
Hello?
Azubi,
hello?
You there?
I think I was on mute.
Oh, sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but you heard me, right, about the linebackers?
Yeah, I heard you, yeah. So what I was saying is I'm kind of dreaming of that. I haven't been, overly, excited about it, but I haven't been disappointed. Obviously, I think it's a step up from what we've seen last year for sure. Obviously, last year linebacker was kind of a head-scratching position where I was like, what the heck is going on? But, I like the progression that they made. Francisco Malgo has been definitely an upgrade from what we've seen last year. And, obviously one guy I do want to see a little bit more out of is Wesley Bissaint. Obviously, in him coming into his second year, him kind of getting his feet wet last year and, really diving headfirst this year. But, I think as the year continues, as they kind of find out exactly who that 1-2 punch is, because I feel like they've been kind of flipping and flopping with it, maybe a little bit of KJ Coyd, a little bit of Francisco, a little bit of Wesley. So I feel like once they find that duo and that duo starts clicking, we'll see a little bit more out of it. But, I can't complain because last year compared to now, I feel like the linebackers are a step above, but do want to see a little bit more from them.
All right. And I'd like to see more from Wesley Bissaint as well. Was hoping that he would be doing a lot more by now, but I do like the way that Lance Guidry is using him in special roles and where he can make an impact. Kelbeck's asking about all the analysts in the program. Kelbeck, I apologize. We can't provide an entire list right now. There's a lot of them and talk about all their different roles and stuff, but there's probably at least about, I don't know, eight to 10 of them, I would say. Smallheiser says that the Miami-Louisville game is going to decide which team goes to the ACC championship game. Azubi, that means Miami would beat Clemson and North Carolina probably and be right there and win or lose against Florida State, that the Miami-Louisville game might decide who would play Florida State in the title game. Not out of the question, I guess. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's definitely if there's one team that's kind of surprising me a little bit, it's definitely Louisville this year with Brom coming in and all that stuff. And it's actually funny, I was talking to one of my buddies that's a big Louisville fan, and he was telling me, he's the one that kind of told me Louisville's kind of looking a little bit better than it did last year, and this game's going to have a little bit more to it because it's the first inaugural game with the Howard Schnellenberger Trophy being played for and all that good stuff. So, that game, with these teams, if they continue on, how they're doing, both undefeated, that game might have, a little bit more juice behind it with the Howard Schnellenberger Trophy and then potentially, ACC championship implications. So, obviously, like you mentioned, take it game by game. You never want to look ahead too far in the schedule, especially, towards the end of your season. But that's definitely going to, have some eyes on it as we creep and get closer to that game later on to the season.
Well, they have a pretty easy schedule, but they got to go at NC State, which I wouldn't just write that in as a victory. NC State is capable in a night game in Raleigh of putting a good game together. I mean, I thought they really screwed up last week. They still won, but they were sitting on the damn lead in the fourth quarter and almost cost themselves a victory. But then they got to play Notre Dame, but they get them at home. But that's still going to be very difficult to win. They have to go at Pittsburgh. I'm disappointed in Pittsburgh. I'm not picking Pittsburgh to win anything anymore. They've been horrendous. Duke goes into Louisville. That will obviously be an interesting game. Virginia Tech, Virginia, and then Miami, and obviously Kentucky at the end of the year, but that's out of conference. I don't know. I mean, I see Louisville ending up with two or three losses on the season, but having a good year. It'll just be interesting to see what their record is when they come into Miami and if that can be, you know, a really, really, really big game. But obviously it'll be one where Miami has to play well. Let me see. Keith 19 says, Gary, you stated 3 years ago that we needed Mario here. We got him. You also said recruiting and staff upgrades were needed. We got that also. What else do we need to turn the corner to get into elite status and compete for titles? Just some more elite players, Keith. Just some more elite players. Got to win on guys like Jeremiah Smith. Absolutely have to. Got to win on guys like Ellis Robinson over at IMG. Those are the kind of elite-type players that you need to get in the program that will take Miami to that next level that we've talked about. More Francis Maiagoas, for example, who's you see how well he's playing as a true freshman. That's it, man. Just some more elite players, Keith. Let's see. Miami 6 Kane wants to know how many 5-stars we end up with. What do you think, Azubi? There's a lot of them still on the board. Does Miami win some of these recruiting battles for the 5-stars?
Yeah, I think Miami swings too this cycle. I believe last year we had Francis Maugo and Samson Okunlola were the 2 5-stars last year, if I'm not mistaken. But I think there was 2 last year. I think this year they swing 2 as well. They land two guys that end up with 5-star status. Potentially LJ McCray, who's now a 5-star, I believe number 7 in the country. That's a guy Miami's fully in the mix with. I don't know if Ainsley Brilliant is a 5-star yet, but I think he's on the fringe of becoming one. And I really, really do think Miami flips one of these big guys that they missed out, first time around, whether it be a David Stone, Jeremiah Smith, Ellis Robinson. But my prediction right now, I feel like Miami ends with 2 5-stars.
All right, so I'm looking at the 5-star list. Jeremiah Smith, number 1. I've already talked about that. I think Miami, at the end of the day, will have a chance to get him. I think at the end of the day, they will have a chance to steal Ellis Robinson. David Stone, I don't think is going well. I've not heard great things there. I don't think they're gonna flip David Stone. I wouldn't give up on Dylan Stewart. You just never know there. Let me see who else. Ryan Wingo. Like Azubi said, Miami won't give up there. If Miami does not get Jeremiah Smith, then they probably go all in on Ryan Wingo, and he gets the offer that he can't refuse. I think one of those 5-star receivers has a great chance of ending up in the recruiting class. It won't be more than one, but one of them for sure. You have several candidates.
I was going to say JoJo Trader, 3 spots, or actually 1 spot away from being a 5-star. The last 5-star is 32nd ranked, and JoJo Trader is 34th ranked. So if he continues to have a good year, he might get that 5-star bump as well too. So that might be another guy already in the class.
But maybe not quite having a good enough year. Wouldn't you agree, Azubi? Like, he's doing well, but he's not doing, like, oh, my God, well. The oh, my God is his teammate.
Yeah. I will say, though, he has battled with that shoulder injury since the first game. His very first game versus Northwestern, he did very well. And then he gets banged up versus St. Francis in their actual official first game. So I feel like that maybe – and against Miami Central, I don't think he was 100% healthy either because he kind of had to take some time out. But I think if he was playing at 100% this year, he would kind of be doing those oh-my-gosh plays that we're known for seeing him do. But, yeah, he has kind of been a little bit – not underwhelming, but not as productive as you want to see. But he is battling injuries as well too, so I've got to give him that.
All right, T-Dog wants to know why Tyler Van Dyke is not getting talked about by the national media, even though he's one of the top graded quarterbacks in the country with Pro Football Focus. His name has started to creep a little bit in the Heisman list, but Miami Azubi hasn't had the stage for Tyler Van Dyke. They had the one national game against Texas A&M that a lot of people saw. But other than that, they've kind of been off the stage, and nobody's really seen Tyler Van Dyke.
Yeah, I'm going to have to say I think that is a blessing in disguise for Tyler Van Dyke and the Hurricanes, for him to continue to fly under the radar, because, you know, last season he came in with the Heisman watch this, Heisman watch that, and all that stuff, and then we saw how the season turned out with injuries and just not be able to find his groove. Now, I feel like he's hitting his stride, you know, kicking into third year, fourth year, whatever gear he may be. He's just kind of continuing to find it, and I feel like he's going to hit his full stride, you know, in his ACC conference play and when it really matters. And I feel like I said, that's a blessing in disguise for him, not to, you know, have this national spotlight on him, you know, saying TV this, TV that, just put your head down, work, continue to work, and then obviously that recognition will come. But just I'm not kind of a guy that's going to be worried about TVD not getting considered in the Heisman talk after 4 weeks and all that, you know, hoopla stuff. So, like I said, a blessing to this guy, I think, for Tyler Van Dyke not to be, you know, getting his name thrown around national media like he did last year and, you know, kind of underperforming and everything like that.
And Jay Collette wants us to talk about the play of the defensive line, defensive tackles, and the lack of pass rush from the defensive end. I would say the play on the defensive line has been just average. I mean, I'm not going to say it's been great, even though I mean, it's kind of weird, though, because the run game stats are phenomenal, but I'm not sure that that's just not a byproduct of scheme and circumstance. They haven't really played a really good rushing team. So that could be a little bit of an aberration, in my opinion. The pass rush, to me, is been extremely average. You know, nobody really putting up any kind of crazy good stats in the pass rush department, even though they haven't really played anybody. I don't know, Zuby. I mean, maybe I'm being a little hard. I am not overwhelmed by the defensive line play so far. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm gonna say it's been, you know, average. Yeah, it hasn't been awful. It hasn't been, you know, jaw dropping where you're seeing these guys living in the backfield, eating sacks up, you know, doing all that stuff. Obviously, granted, you were without, you know, a few of your guys for two games. And also, you're not playing against the best offensive lines yet. So I feel like the number should be a little bit higher, but I'm not going to, you know, completely say, no, this defensive line are disappointing me so far. I would just go average. Just like, you know, I said with the linebacker group, I feel like they're doing, I don't know if I can say better than last year, because last year I felt like they're doing pretty good, but I feel like I'm not disappointed, but I do want to see a little bit more out of those guys.
All right, and lastly, the guys chatting it up on the message boards are not in favor of a Cormani McClain transfer portal to Miami. So, you know, we'll see what happens there down the road. I wouldn't just totally dismiss a kid because he's immature as a true freshman, man. If you had to dismiss kids who are immature as true freshmen, you'd be dismissing half the kids in college football, including a lot of guys that are on this Miami Hurricane team right now doing a pretty darn good job. And I'm not going to call them out by name or whatever, but there are several guys on this team that were very immature early in their career who are doing very well right now. All right, I want to thank everybody who participated in tonight's show. Great show, everybody. A lot of good calls. Tomorrow night, we'll have the Lamar Thomas show at 8 o'clock. You won't want to miss that. Always promises to be great. We are not going to have a Cane Sport Live next Tuesday with the off week this week. We will skip next Tuesday night, but we will be back after the Georgia Tech game that following Tuesday with another edition of Cane Sport Live. So thanks again to everybody who listened and called in, and we will see you. Thank you, obviously, to Azubi for helping me out here so my voice doesn't go totally dead. And we'll see you guys all next time. Good night, everybody.